Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob Matter, you're out, cause I'm lying. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. And you know, Norm, this is the first time in 20 years that I've been in Maine in March.
Oh, wow.
Because I used to run away to Florida. That's and I've forgotten how colorful the roads are this time of year. Wow. No wonder the Chevys don't last 10 years like they should. Anyway, nice to have you on board tonight. And we have a great show lined up. We have a room full of guests who I'll introduce in just a moment. But first, we want to welcome you, and then I want to introduce our crew. He's the man behind the toggle switches in the operations center, the guy in the left seat, the chief pilot, Norm Plourd.
Good evening, and I tell you what, looking at the forecast for the next week, week and a half,
yeah,
about this time next weekend, we should have spring fever.
Yeah, mid-50s, I think.
Somewhere's in there, yeah.
I might have one ice fishing trip left. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Well, you should be able to.
Yeah. And also, our co-host, who is a registered Maine guide, she hails from my favorite county, Aroostook County, and she knows how to shoot a gun and cast a long fly line, Catherine Gordon.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And you've been getting a lot of publicity lately. Somebody said you were in the BDN. I missed the Saturday
issue. I had a little article, a couple pictures with them holding some baby bears. It was fun.
Aren't they fantastic, those little...
They're so cute, and I picked one up and it snuggled its little head right under my chin.
Yeah.
But then you could see the claws.
Yeah,
and
they have little pieces of wire. Yeah,
yeah, these are wild animals, and they're going to grow up to be pretty fierce. But they're cute.
A bear den visit's a lot of fun.
It was.
Our guest tonight, in this order, we have Tim Caverly, who's written a new book. I guess it's his 14th book, called Conversations 2. And he is here with his wife, Sue, and also Buzz Caverly, formerly the superintendent of Baxter State Park for many years, a legend in his own time. And his wife is here, Eloise, as well. Nice to have all you folks here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we had a hard time getting all the headsets on the right thing, but we're doing okay. Everybody can hear, right?
Yeah, I'm still a little traumatized by that.
Anyway, nice to have you here. We'll be talking to them in just a few minutes. A couple of other things. I want to remind you, too, that you're listening to us, as you do every week, on WVOM-FM, the Voice of Maine, News Talk Network. And what are the frequencies, in case somebody wants to tune us in, Catherine?
Well, let's see. It's 101.3 and 103.9. www.wvomfm.com.
Right, okay.
Got it all in there.
You did. And also, we want to remind you that people can hear us anywhere in the world. We're streaming live online, and we have good, loyal listeners all over the place, and we're pleased to have them listening to us online. And let's see, what else? There's a phone number, and the phone number is here in case you want to call and be part of the show. And what is that number, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
And that is a toll-free statewide number. You can call us from anywhere in the country on our nickel. Let's see. A couple other things I want to remind you. This show is sponsored every week, partly by my favorite publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal. If you'd like to get a subscription, you may do so by calling Alicia at the office at 732-4880, 732-4880, and check out our website at sportingjournal.com. A couple of other items here. I want to remind you, the Orno Sportsman Show is coming up, Catherine, this weekend.
Yay, I can't wait.
Okay, that's Saturday and Sunday. Actually, it starts Friday, right?
Yes.
Friday at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, I think.
Yeah.
And we'll be there. The Sporting Journal will have a booth. Tim Caverly's going to be there with his books. And we hope to have you turn out. Again, that's this Saturday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, up at the University of Maine, the Eastern Maine Sportsman Show. And I don't know, they've been doing this for, I don't know, do you know how many years, Tim?
I don't. We've been doing it for 13.
I think it's been around for 50 years, as far as I can remember. Anyway, we hope you stop by and say hello. And also, the Presque Isle Show will be the following weekend, March 22nd and 23rd. Yours truly will be up there with some magazines and some books, and we hope you, if you're up in the county, hope you stop by. You're probably not going to travel all the way up for that, right?
I just came back from Prescott yesterday.
It's a drive.
It is a drive. Well, fun drive.
It is, yeah. And you can move right along on I-95 now.
Yeah, you know, it's 75. When I was in college, it was 55. Now it's 75 miles an hour.
It's incredible, yeah. Most people are going 80. Yeah. Anyway, we hope to see you at those shows. The other thing, the Cora Shriners down in Lewiston are having a big outdoor exposition on April 11th to the 13th. And that's no admittance, no charge for admission there. And that's April 11th through 13. That's the Cora Shriners Outdoor Expo in Lewiston. And we hope you, if you're down in the Lewiston area, we hope you get a chance to check that out. We're going to dispense with the fishing report tonight out of respect for our guests here tonight. We want to make sure we have enough time. And we didn't have any big fishing stories. If you've got a great fishing story you want to tell, you're welcome to call in. And what's the number, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
So on that note, we're going to segue right to the outdoor trivia question. And if you have the right answer, Tim Caverly has agreed to give you his latest book called Conversations 2, his 14th book. And what have you been doing, goofing off, Tim?
Yeah. My spare time, yeah.
How the heck do you write that many books? You must be at the typewriter every day.
Well, I wake up in the night, my wife doesn't want to talk.
All right. Anyway, we'll be giving you one of those books if you know the answer to Catherine's question.
The question is, what is the name of the lower jaw protrusion on a male salmonoid? The name of that lower jaw protrusion. Did I say protrusion? I'm having a hard time with that word, but you all know what
protrusion.
I mean, right? Thank you.
It's the thing that sticks out on the lower jaw of a salmon or a brown trout, I guess. It could be a salmon, a brown, any type of a salmonid is like a brown trout. It could be a rainbow trout, could be a lake trout, could be a brook trout, right?
Absolutely.
We want to know what you call that jaw that sticks out down there. 1-800-966-1039. You ponder that. Cogitate on that. We'll be right back.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Are you having trouble hearing? Hearing loss can devastate the quality of your life. Now, there's an affordable fix for you or your loved one. Rated in the best hearing aids of 2024 by USA Today, Audion Hearing has the highest quality hearing aids at the lowest prices, just $189.
I actually like them better than my old $5,000 hearing aids.
I could not believe how my hearing and life changed.
Join over 500,000 happy customers by going to audionhearing.com. That's A-U-D-I-E-N hearing.com.
During tax season, your personal info travels to a lot of places you can't control. Between payroll, your home office, your tax preparer, and the IRS, if your W-2 gets exposed, that's just the ticket for identity thieves. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points every second. If your identity's stolen, they'll fix it guaranteed or your money back. Don't let identity thieves take you for a ride. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code CLAY. Visit LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Okay, Judge Gordon is standing by waiting for you to tell her the name of the lower jaw that protrudes on a male salmonid. And, of course, most of you folks know a salmonid could be a brook trout, could be a lake trout, could be a brown trout, rainbow. It's a male salmonid has a lower jaw that sticks out. We want to know what the formal name of that is. We have a caller, Norm? And good evening to you, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors, and we'd like to have your first name and where you're calling us from.
Bob. I'm calling from Brunswick.
Okay, Bob. Welcome to the show. What do you think the answer is, Bob?
K-Y-P-E, kype.
All right.
Yay! Good job.
That is the right answer, isn't it?
It is the right answer.
Okay, congratulations. You have won a copy of Buzz Caverly's new book called Collections 2.
Yeah, it's a great book. We've been, you know, perusing the book here.
We're going to talk about it a little bit here in a few minutes.
Wow.
And we're glad to have somebody from Brunswick. We don't get a lot of callers from the Brunswick area. And it's nice to have you on board. Anything going on with you in the outdoor world you want to talk about?
No, I just heard some gobbles today, and I'm getting ready.
Ooh, I love turkey hunting.
You know, I'm getting a little fired up myself. I have a crossbow, a new crossbow that I didn't get a chance to deer hunt with. I'm going to try hunting with a crossbow. What type of turkeys do you, what, I mean, you hunt with a bow or gun or what?
Well, I got two turkeys, legal turkeys, with my bow.
Nice.
The arrow passed through one and then hit the other one, so they were both, you know, they done each other in by flopping around on the arrow.
Yeah, you know, I shot a turkey in back of my house in Hamden a number of years ago, and I was surprised to see, you know, I put an arrow into that thing, and it flopped around pretty good, and for some reason, the other male turkeys started attacking this poor thing that I had shot. And apparently, I don't know, there's something in an animal, I guess, that they want to make sure it's dispatched or something. I couldn't figure out what was going
on. Well, it was a domineering bird.
Yeah.
And they attack, the satellite turkeys attack them, saying, here, take this now.
Oh, okay. And I know there's some bird psychology there, I guess. Anyway, well, congratulations to you. And it won't be long. We'll be turkey hunting, and I guess the season opens on the 28th of April, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you in the turkey woods. One other quick question. How do you cook those birds?
I usually debreast them and take the leg meat. The wing meat's too tough, but
yeah.
I take the leg meat, and I put that in soups. I slow cook it.
Yeah.
But the breast meat, I usually put liquid smoke on it. We cook it on the grill.
Yeah, I've done that. It's good. Yeah. Just don't overcook it, right?
Well, she's signaling to me how she cooks it. So. she cordon blues it.
Oh, put some prosciutto on there. Yeah, that's good.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bob, if you'll stay on the line, Norm's going to get your address, and we'll make sure that you get Tim's book, okay?
Okey-doke.
All right, nice to hear from you. Call in again sometime.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Yep.
All right, that was the correct answer. The protrusion on a male salmonid is called a kype. Did you know that, Buzz?
No.
You didn't know that? Tim, did you know it?
No.
You're kidding. I bet you guys know that.
No.
You didn't really?
No.
Yeah.
That's why we listen to your show.
Oh, okay.
Yay, good answer.
Did you know that?
No.
You didn't know that?
No.
I'm amazed. Sue, you must have known that, right? No? Eloise? No. Louise, I'm sorry. Louise.
No.
Okay. You didn't know that either. All right. Anyway, it's called a kype.
But you knew that?
Oh, yeah. I knew that years ago.
Okay.
All right. Anyway.
I'm teasing.
Okay. Anyway, I thought that was going to be a real easy question, but apparently it wasn't. Some of you folks didn't know what that was. Okay. Anyway, let's get down to business here and talk to our guests. And if you just joined us, our guests again are Tim Caverly. Now, Tim was formerly the Allagash Wilderness Waterway Director.
Yes, 18 years.
18 years, and Buzz was the director or superintendent of Baxter State Park. How many years, Buzz?
About 24.
24 years, right. So you guys are brothers, and Catherine asked you the question earlier, which one of you is the older?
Him.
Okay. I can't tell if you guys are joking or not.
No.
I don't know.
I'm the oldest.
Yeah. And we've had you on the show before, and I remember Phyllis Austin wrote a great book about you, Buzz, and I read the entire book, and she did a wonderful job.
She put a lot of good work into that.
She did, yeah.
I appreciate very much the details that she provided.
Yeah, it's a great, what is the name of that book again? I read it, but I forgot the name of it.
Wilderness Partners.
Yeah, that was a good book. Anyways, great to have both of you folks here. Let's start out with talking a little bit about the book. Again, Tim has written 14 books. His first one was the Allagash Tales, Volume 1, which he wrote 13 years ago. And he's been busy, busy, busy. He's got 14 of these jobbies, and he's got his latest one just came off the press called Conversations 2. Tim, tell us about this book.
This is a sequel to a book that Buzz and I came out with last year called Conversations. We have a combined total of 78 years as conservation officers between my service with the Park Department and Buzz in Baxter Park. And you don't have to make stuff up over that period of time. And we do a lot of outreach and speak to a lot of different places and attend sportsman shows. And we'll be at Orono and then Presque Isle. And folks were asking questions, and there's some things that are confusing. So we thought, well, let's put it down on paper, what we know, and hopefully people enjoy it. And within 6 months of my putting out a book, they were asking for the next one, and so that's why we're up to 14.
No kidding. That is great. And The publishing firm is, what is the name of the firm that publishes your books?
Michael Perry Productions out of Newport.
Out of Newport, okay. Now, if somebody, before we run out of time, if somebody wants to get Conversations too, how do they do so?
They should contact me from through email, tim.cavalli@7357@gmail.
Okay. And for those of you folks at home, I think to give you an idea about the gist of the book, the table of contents has some really interesting chapter titles. For example, there's one here called The Attack of the Killer Bear. There's here about a bear in the air. And there's also one in here we're going to talk about in a few minutes about snowmobiles that made it to the top of Baxter Peak, if you can believe that or not. And there's a great story that goes with that. There's a whole bunch of stories in there. And each one of these, how do you go about when you do a book like this? Now, some of this stuff, you kept a diary, and I think your wife, Sue, also kept a diary when you were superintendent of the waterway.
Yes, daily.
Is this how you get your memory jogs to write these stories?
Well, pretty much, yes, just to confirm what we're telling is actual accurate. But, yeah, and I'll just read a quick diary entry.
Okay.
And this is from my Ranger's Journal. Came from a trapper in northern Maine called Henry Taylor. He lived around the Allegash. And he was telling, an elderly man lived there till he passed away. And he was telling me how parts of animals can help people's health. And he said, for example, you take a beaver castor, a scent gland from a beaver, right, dry it, put it in a liquid, and let the liquid absorb the goodness out of the castor, and drink that, and it'll calm your heart rate and lower your blood pressure.
You're kidding.
And he did that every morning.
Is that
right? How old was he when he died?
89.
Yeah, no kidding.
And he said also that...
Sound like my cup of tea.
Well, people in Allegash put their beaver castors into tea. Henry preferred vodka, actually. And then he said that for people with arthritis, that you eat a gallbladder of a bear. And that'll help lower the pain of arthritis. He says the only trouble is that when you eat a gall of a bear, it tastes like wet bear. So I'm not sure that'd be very tasty either.
That doesn't appetize me at all.
No.
Doesn't whet my appetite. But I guess gallbladders are bought up by the Asians, are they not?
Yes, as fast as they're caught.
Market for them.
Sent overseas.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's fascinating. Wow.
And so, I liked how Sue's diary entry was the beginning of each chapter. I thought that was great. That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the book, there's a little memory jog at the beginning of each chapter from Sue's diary. Are all of these chapters twigged in by your diary?
Most of them. There's a few that come from Tim's log.
Yeah.
But most of the chapters, the beginning of it, it's my diary entry. Yeah.
So do you help Tim focus these recollections when he sits down to write? Is he asking you, Sue, what happened in this particular situation? Did he?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
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 Sometimes.
She makes sure that I use TOO instead of TO when I'm writing.
So you proofread his work?
Yes.
Yeah.
We sit down together and we go through it and read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what is your writing regimen? Do you write all the time, or you start every right in the morning?
Sometimes 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. That's when my ideas come. And if I don't write them down, I forget them.
Yeah.
And I may be going through a town or something. We see a name and think, gee, that'd be a great name for a character. Like one of the characters in one of my books is Taunton Scudder. And we used him as the bad guy in the book.
Yeah.
But I just never know when an idea is going to come. And sometimes it's talking with my brother Buzz or folks at a sportsman show. They'll ask a question. In fact, in that book, you'll read about when the building over the trains were burned. And there's a lot of speculation about why that was done and how that was done. And I've cleared that up in this book.
All right.
The trains on the waterway.
How long did it take you to write this book? You just 180 pages, roughly?
Yeah, it's
245 pages. How long does it take you to write a book like that?
We got right at it because we wanted it in time for the sportsman shows. And so I'm going to say probably 2 months, 2.5 months.
Wow.
And then I went through the editing process for quite a while and then publishing.
Yeah. Incredible.
And I just have a question, because I know you wrote a lot, and your wife had the diary entries at the beginning. Did you write alternate parts of it, or did you help him write part of it? Or?
We just talked about the issues, and he took it from there.
Great. Right. No, I wondered how that worked.
Well, yeah. The snowmobile's on Katahdin, he filled in all the blank space.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, let's go right to that. There's a chapter in here. It's chapter 11, and the name of the chapter is Snowmobiles on Mount Katahdin. I was quite amazed to find this out. I didn't know this. But somebody actually took a snowmobile to the top of the mountain. And tell us about that, Buzz, would you?
Okay, in 19...
Pull that mic right up to you. Pull it. Yeah, get right up to that, sir. Yeah, thank you.
As far as it comes. Oh, I'm not weak or strong enough again. In 1963, we had our first transfer of caribou from up north to Baxter Park. And they trucked them down in trailer trucks. Coles Trucking Company, I think, was the ones involved in that. We got them to a corral at just outside of the park, and held them until the National Guard called on them and asked if they could come up and move them from the corral to the plateau of Mount Katahdin. And so that's what took place. And when the helicopters were moving the caribou, on the last trip in, the last load, the weather deteriorated somewhat, and they had a bunch of nets that they had used to haul the caribou, and they felt they had to get their aircraft out of there where the weather was coming in, so they left the nets on the ground. The following winter, Supervisor Taylor, Helen Taylor, long-term supervisor of the park, right up until 1957, asked a ranger, Rodney Sargent, if he and the local game warden, Alma Knowlton, would see if they could get snow sleds up onto the plateau and look and see if they could find those nets and locate them anyway, or more hopefully we could get them hauled out by sled. And the two went to work on it. They found a route to travel. We won't talk about the details of that. they got up there successfully. They could not find the nets. They'd been buried in snow and ice and whatever. But they took a side trip up to Baxter Peak. And while they were up there, one of them decided it'd be a good idea to take a picture of the two sleds. They did. It was right in front of the Mount Katahdin sign, information sign. And the picture somehow, I don't know how, but got to the press. And there was headlines in the paper, "Monsters Invade Katahdin." Governor Baxter was very much alive at that time, saw those headlines, and was extremely disappointed, and basically said he didn't want sleds in the park at that time.
Yeah.
And there is a picture of that in the book, which I enjoyed seeing that picture.
Yes.
Yeah. And these are the old 12 horsepower Skidoos.
Yeah,
go
that's,
way back.
That's correct. Yeah. 1967 type models.
So Governor Baxter was really ripped, huh?
He was very disappointed. Yeah. Yes, and he made it clear. The individuals that did it were on assignment by the supervisor.
Yeah.
He'd asked them to go up,
yeah,
see if they could locate these and get them down for the guard.
So was that explained to Mr. Baxter, and he calmed him down, or?
Well, he just. I don't know any details on that conversation between him and the supervisor at that time. We never did get the nets, and we've never had any hikers in the summer report that they've seen nets in their various trails they've traveled.
Maybe the caribou ate them. Who knows? Yeah. It's sort of a digression, but those caribou, you were there during that time, right?
Yes.
You were working as a ranger.
Yes.
For Mr.
Yep.
Taylor, right?
Yep.
What happened, do you think? Do you have any theory on what happened to those caribou?
Well, the meningitis disease, the tick, we call it.
I think it was a brain worm that got him?
It was caused, a lot of the problems, according to what the biologist had reported later. We had one that was a physical example. It went on, was on top of Traveler Mountain, which is quite a ways from Katahdin, north end of the park. And it evidently it had a collar on, a tracking collar.
Yeah.
And some campers up there were on the foot of Traveler and saw something went over, and it was a caribou male. It had evidently got the disoriented from the tick, the disease, and fell off the cliff.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow.
Had expired at that spot. So we know that that was one. There was another one that was there was talk at the coffee shop up in small town just out, well, Sherman Mills, that somebody had eaten some caribou meat. So the wardens made an investigation, and they got through in getting information from the locals and so forth. They went to this farmhouse and went into a kind of a shed-like, and then across the walkway, and then there was a screen door going into the kitchen. And above that screen door, there was one of these tracking devices, the collar, hanging on a deer antler.
No kidding.
And so they went in and they interrogated the owner, and he finally fessed up. But he said, "I got one question for you. How in the world did you ever find us?" And the warden said, "Well, it was pretty convenient." He said, "When you put the tracking device up there, and then we walked in the shed and saw it hanging on the deer antler." So case closed.
Yeah, that's a good story. All right, we're going to have Tim tell us about the flying bear, but we're going to take a short commercial break to pay the bills. Okay, Tim, we come back, and you folks at home, if you have questions for either Buzz or Tim or Sue, the number to call is what, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
Okay, and don't be bashful. Call in if you have a question. We'll be right back with more here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors with Tim and Buzz Caverly, and we're talking about Tim's got a great new book, 14th book he's done called Conversations 2. And there's a chapter in here called Are There Bears, You Ask?
Yes.
And within this, Tim, there's a section here about an airborne bear.
Yes.
And I can't believe there was a bear in the air, but how did that happen?
Before I get to that, they can also find my book at my website, AllagashTales.com.
Okay.
And Tales is spelled T-A-I-L-S. And Sue and I are speaking throughout New England, and we're scheduling into 2026 now. And if they'd like to come see us, check out our events link on the website. And we'd love to have them in the audience.
All right, great.
So in the fall of the year, the National Guard, it wasn't uncommon for them to help the park rangers to get material, construction material, into remote campsites, such as Russell Pond. It's a 7-mile hike to get in there. And at the end of 3 days, they were about done, and the colonel was so pleased with the work they'd done that he brought in a cookout for the pilots and the ranger. And after the cookout, they were all full, and so they went for an early bed. Well, there were scraps left over, and there was an old bear in the area that could smell those scraps. They tried to chew through the cabin to get inside the cabin. And once a bear is that unafraid of humans, he's a danger to anybody. And there wasn't much they could do, but the ranger got up in the middle of the night and basically shot the bear as his head was starting to poke through the wall of the cabin. And the bear died outside. The next morning, the ranger got up, and again, they're 7 miles from the nearest vehicle. And the bear was too big, probably over 300 pounds, we think. And so they couldn't move it easily. And so he said, "What am I going to do? We've got people hiking in here, and we can't have a dead bear in a sanctuary." So one of the pilots offered to hook onto the bear with a cable to the helicopter and fly the bear out into the deep part of the forest. So he did, and the bear is tethered to the helicopter as they're going through the air, if you can picture that. And when the pilot comes back, the ranger says, "Where'd you take that bear?" And the pilot pointed right over there towards Russell Mountain. And the ranger slapped his forehead and said, "Oh my gosh, that's the main hiking trail in here. What am I going to do if the bear falls through the woods?" And so we don't know if any hikers ever did see the bear, but knowing how quick some rangers think, I can imagine some people coming up and saying, "It was the funniest thing. We was walking along, and a bear fell right out of the woods, and he must have hit hard because he was dead by the time we got to him." And I can see the ranger thinking for a minute, saying, "Well, we've had that kind of report before. It's not uncommon for the updrafts of Katahdin to actually pick up a small deer or fox and carry him through the air. But you're the first report we've had of a bear being carried through the air. So you've made one for our record books that we keep for just such occasions." And so that's a short part of the story.
All right. Buzz, I know that you've, in your book, there's a lot of interesting things that happened to you. What sticks in your mind for all the years that you were head of the Baxter Park? What are you most proud of? What comes to mind when you look back on the years you spent there at the park?
As director of the park, I worked directly for the Baxter Park Authority, being the Attorney General, Fish and Game Commissioner, and Forestry Director. And I guess the most satisfying thing that I can think of where I may have been of help. During the controversy of bringing snowmobiles back into the park, people promoting that, sportsmen wanting it, environmental not wanting it, the authority was getting a lot of pressure. Glenn Manuel was commissioner at that time, and every time they'd go to a meeting, there'd be somebody pounding from one end or the other, either the opponents or the opponents. And one day I got a call from Glenn. He said he was going to go home Friday, and he'd like to stop and see me and take a little ride in the park. And I said, "Great, look forward to it." And he come up, and we went in through the park a ways, and he said, "Well, I'm on a mission." He says, "We're getting hammered hard from both sides on this issue. There must be a solution."
You mean the snowmobile issue?
The snowmobile issue.
Yeah.
Whether they should be in the park or not be in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two different interests, the environmental interest and the snowmobile industry.
Did you have a point of view at that time?
Do I have what?
What did you think? Did you have a point?
I'm just about to get to that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we took our ride in the park and had a good trip and come up and out into Patton and was up on the hill looking out at the mountain. And he says, "Well, I got a request of you." And I says, "What can I do for you?" And he went to tell me in detail of the pressures they were under. They didn't really have a clue what to do. Governor Baxter had indicated he didn't want any snowmobiles in the park very clearly in the early years when they came out. And so he said, "Would you think this all over? We're meeting in another couple of weeks. And be prepared to come into the meeting and offer us a proposal which you believe would be acceptable, not totally, people wouldn't be totally happy on either side, but it'd be a compromise." And I said, "I'll do my best, sir." And we finished our trip, and he went back. And I thought about that a lot. And I finally concluded that in the summertime, motor vehicles travel from the south end of the park to Oak Pond to Mattagammon with certain restrictions.
Right.
The roads aren't smooth all the time for them, and and they have to drive 25 mile an hour speed limits. And the thought occurred to me, well, if it's reasonable to do that, would it be reasonable to not include the Roaring Brook Road, but would it be reasonable to allow snowmobiles to use the perimeter road from Togue Pond to Mattagammon during the winter months with the restrictions the same as they are in the summer, 25 mile an hour speed limits and no dragging trails? And I thought that over and over and run it by a few people locally and decided that I was going to make that recommendation. And I did. And I went in, he called on me in open meeting with all parties present and asked for me to give him a recommendation. And I did that. And when I got done, people were kind of on both sides kind of calmed on it and were talking with each other. And finally, when I had finished, he asked the other members what they thought about it, and they talked about it in-house. Anyway, they finally said yes, that they'd like to try that on a one-season basis with the restrictions and recommendations that I had made. And when they got done, they turned to the folks from the environmental end of it, and their response was, it's not what we want, it's not what we'd like to do, but we can live with it.
All right, and so you had a compromise.
And then the snowmobilers stood up and made their representative spoke and said, well, we're in a similar situation. We would really like to have it more, not so limited, but on the other hand, we would appreciate the option of doing that. So with both sides agreeing, the authority actually took a vote that day. The press was there, and the snowmobiles today are allowed to go in on the west side of the park and go through the park. They're not allowed to go into Roaring Brook or in the Chimney Pond area, and they're expected to follow the rules.
Is there a speed limit now? For
25 miles an hour.
Is it policed? Enforced?
It's patrolled very well. And since I've retired, every year since 2005 when I retired, I've asked the question of a park employee, what's going on with the snowmobile issue? Is it a problem? And they have not, at that time I got the last report, they have not issued a single warning or summons. They're getting compliance.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Snowmobiles of Maine are doing a good job.
Yeah, so it's working.
Yeah.
And I think that's a logical conclusion. If they allow vehicles, why not allow snow sleds as long as it's, you know.
Yeah. To your original question, it was very satisfying that I was able to present that information to the authority.
Yeah. And it is so today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, and again, you folks at home, we'd like to have questions from you. The number to call is what, Catherine?
It is 1-800-966-1039.
All right, and Tim and Buzz are here, and as well as Sue and
Louise.
Nice to have you here. Now, Sue, you haven't said a word. You've been very quiet. You are the wife of a guy who is the head of the Allegash Waterway. What are your best memories of that time?
I kind of grew up in the woods. During the summer, I would spend time with my grandparents. My grandfather was foreman of a log drive, and my grandmother ended up being a cook at the boom house on Amagegis Lake. So I would spend a lot of my time with them until they retired, and then my parents started taking me into Baxter Park.
So how did you meet this guy?
Buzz.
Oh, Buzz introduced you to him?
Well, I was working for Buzz
at
Oak Pond Gate with my parents, and he found out that I was going to the University of Maine in Machias, where Tim was going, and he kept bugging me to look Tim up. Well, next April will be 51 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, congratulations. That's great.
But it's a hard-fought battle, I got to tell you that.
It always is. It always is.
Tim has been so grateful to me for the recommendation.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a good story. I'm glad I asked that question. All right. We got to make another buck here. And again, Buzz and Tim are here to answer your questions at 1-800-966-1039. But we have a very important commercial message to convey to you. And one of our sponsors has been with us 30 years. You imagine that, Tim? One sponsor for 30 years. That is loyalty, isn't it?
Yes.
And Catherine is going to tell you about General Appliance and Brewer.
Yeah, General Appliance Services. It is now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who's been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Rebuilt appliances available, parts and service for all makes and models. Always reliable, giving you complete support after the sale. You owe it to yourself to come see our gas appliances for your camp. Gas refrigeration, gas lights, gas freezers, gas ranges, and Norm's personal favorite, the composting toilet.
Ride the wave, baby.
Come see us at our new location, just two doors up, still here serving first-class customer service at 103 Center Street, Brewer, Maine.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate that. And, you know, I was thinking while she was doing the commercial, Tim, that we've had writers here before, authors of books. In fact, we had back, I don't know, a couple months ago, we had two authors on. And I, you know, I said, I write a lot. I've been writing for all my life, and I've never been able to think up an idea for a novel. And that's my problem. I know I can write, but I don't have any good ideas. And so I was told that the first thing you need for a good novel is you've got to have a body. All right? If you're going to write a mystery novel, it's got to be a body, right? So anyway, in this book you've written, 174, there's a body, right?
Okay.
Murder in the North Woods. What's that about?
Comes from an early, back in the early 1900s, there was a killing that, of a couple that came out of the woods after working for the Edward LaCroix Company, I believe, cutting wood, and they had a pay voucher to get paid, and they went out to town, and when one guy showed up without the other one, and he had the other guy's pay voucher, they went through a long, it's called the Staten murder case. And so that's a direct newspaper story that I found.
So this was, did this happen in the waterway?
Yeah, well, they were working in the waterway back in the early 1900s before it became under the state.
Yeah, so how did you find this story?
I'm constantly researching people who bring things up to me and give me, this is a good idea.
Oh.
It's amazing the amount of stuff out there, and it could take a historian years and years and years to dig it all up.
All right.
But I got to talk about composting toilets just for a second.
Okay.
In the story, you read about Merrill's aerial privy. It was on Long Lake up on the Allegash, and it was 20 feet off the ground.
20 feet off the ground?
Yep, and there's a picture of a woman climbing the ladder to go up
goodness.
There. And there's a gorgeous view up there, but once you started down, it wasn't so nice.
All right. Well, we've heard a lot of compost toilet stories. That's a good one. We have a caller standing by who may have some questions for you. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with the Caverleys, and we'd like to have your first name and from where are you calling?
My first name is Gene.
Hi, Gene.
I live in Brewer.
Okay, Gene. What's going on?
Well, I'm totally blind, and I would like to know if they have any of those books on audio.
Oh yes. Do you have any audio?
I don't believe we do, but. Can we get a phone? Can you give us a phone number once we get off the air a little bit, and I'll call you back and see what I can find out about that.
Sure.
My publisher may be able to help me with that.
Yeah, it can be done.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate the call. Was it Gene, right?
Right.
Anything else on your mind tonight, Gene?
No, I listen to you all the time, and
well, I
heard a lot of the different authors, and it's the first time I called about the audio part of it.
Well, I know Island Port Press, who did one of my books, delves into electronic, audio books. So, anyway, Tim, if you give your number to Norm, Tim will call you after the show, and we'll see what we can do for you. Okay?
Yeah. Don't hang up. I'll get your phone number.
Don't hang up. Norm's going to get your number. All right.
Okay,
Gene. Thanks, and we appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
Take care. All right. Go ahead, Tim.
I started writing books because I was working at school, and students didn't want to read or go to the library. And so I thought, well, maybe if I write a book, maybe that'd make them interested. And so I did write a book, a children's book. And I read it in class, and they immediately asked if there was any more stories. I wasn't going to do any more.
Oh, that's how it started?
And that's how it started. And the next book was a ghost story, an Allegash haunting, which was made into a stage play.
Ooh.
And done as a radio broadcast about 8 different times. We have that script. But what I wanted to share is that Sue and I speak at schools throughout New England. We just came back from doing 6 programs in 2 days in southern Maine.
Wow.
In the last, since we started, we've spoken to over 12,000 students between Maine and Vermont.
Have you?
To encourage literacy and learning about the natural world.
Oh, fantastic.
And I have to thank Rotaries, the Knights of Columbus, Lions Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs. They've been very supportive in sponsoring our visits into schools and actually donating many of our books to those same schools. So we're hoping that where Maine is 49th in the nation on literacy, that we're hoping we can help reverse that a little bit.
Yeah, that's great.
And, I love that.
Yeah, as long as they're reading, whatever it is, get them to read. If they just get them to open a book and get away from those darn iPhones and all the video games.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. Maine, I saw that. I couldn't believe that Maine is in grade schools is one of the lowest in the country.
We have one book, which is a children's book, where it's Andy the Moose and Andy Sings. And last week, Sue had 25 kindergarten students singing like a moose with the teachers filling in the background. So
That's great.
I love it.
What's the story, the Allagash Haunting? I haven't read that. What's that about?
A young girl, our granddaughter, takes a trip down the Allagash, and then she gets to Churchill. She meets a French-Canadian lumberjack ghost, and he takes her back in time to a 1925 lumberjack dance at the boarding house, Churchill Inn boarding house, which is still there. And it's based on a actual ghost sighting that some volunteers heard fiddle music and footsteps one night in a place where they shouldn't have been either right. One. And we go into schools and tell the story behind the story. And the kids really like it.
But it's fictional, based on some kind of a story that you heard?
I had some volunteers who were staying one night in the old boarding house up there and in the middle of the night, nobody stayed overnight for 70 years. In the middle of the night, I heard footsteps and fiddle music coming out of every room, and they were out of there. They weren't going to stay in that building
with fiddle music.
Yeah. So but there's more to that story, as you can imagine.
Yeah, great. I want to ask you, Buzz, were you head of the park when Don Fendler got lost?
No, that was 1939, and I was born in 1939.
Oh, sorry. I guess you weren't quite ready for the park.
I was training for a long time.
Okay, yeah. Well, I don't do too good with numbers. You know, I'm a language guy, not a mathematician. Anyway, did you see the movie about Don Fendler?
Yes, I did.
Ooh.
Up to Dover Foxtrot.
We're going to take a call in just a minute, but we have time for that. What was your impression of the movie?
I thought it was very well.
You get closer to the mic, would you?
I thought it was very well done, knowing what I knew about the story.
Yeah.
And obviously had heard from Don over the years. He came back right up until the time of his demise and would speak to schools and so forth.
Yeah.
So.
Did you like the way they portrayed the mountain in the movie, the Pole Park? Was that?
Yeah.
I thought it was very well done. I know some people panned the movie, but I thought it was excellent. Yeah,
I thought so, too.
We have a caller. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with the Cavaliers. Go ahead.
Good evening, Paul. This is Andre Cushing. How are you this evening?
Hey, Andre. Good to hear from you. We're doing well. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Andre. Did we lose him?
I think we did because I'm not sure where he is.
Okay. Well, try again, Andre. Somehow we got you disconnected. But if you want to...
Can you hear me?
Okay, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Sure. So this is Andre Cushing. My folks started the campground on Ripogenus Lake, Allagash Gateway. Spent many great summers up there. And I recollect back in the 70s that there was a fire in the park, and I don't know, Buzz, if you were there at that point, but I was curious about some of the background of the fight to keep the use of the D-9s for building fire lines and what you remember of that, if you were there.
Yes, I was there. It was 1974, and we had a lightning strike over in back of a lost pond, and it spread, and it was... a real challenge getting that out, but the Maine Forest Service and park people got it done, and it was quite a long operation, though.
Yeah, I remember it was a little controversial, wasn't it, because how they were trying to do the fire lines?
Yeah, in 74, we had a big blowdown up there, and they were trying to clean that up pretty much, but the fire beat them to it.
Okay, we appreciate the call, Andre.
Have a good evening, gentlemen, ladies.
Nice to hear from you. Yeah, take care.
Take care.
All right. In the time remaining, again, if you would like to get a copy of Buzz's book, it's his latest out of 14 he's done called Conversations 2. And how does somebody get the book, Buzz? I mean, Tim?
It's on my website, allagashtales.com, or they can email me at tim.caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, 7357 at gmail.com.
All right.
And can I throw something else in?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
The Allagash is famous for alien abductions that occurred up there in 1976.
Oh, my word, really?
And I'm pleased to report in my new book that Baxter now has a Sasquatch sighting, so they tried to catch up to us.
So are you saying you got another book in you?
No, that's in this book.
It's in this book?
Yeah, the Sasquatch, yeah.
Oh, the Sasquatch?
Yeah.
Oh, we should have talked about that. We should have.
I know. Now you have to come back.
We don't have the time, though.
we actually have drawings of it. So
the Sasquatch?
In the book, yeah.
Well, I believe in the Sasquatches, you know. Yeah. I really do. Do you, Catherine?
No.
I do. Go ahead, Buzz.
I would like to mention, too, that one of the stories in the book is a story at Baxter of that went publicized big was the killer bear in Baxter Park, and that's a fun story to read about.
Is that in this book?
Yes.
Okay.
The killer bear. All right. Anyway, there's all kinds of great stories in the book, so be sure and pick up a copy. And thank you, gentlemen and ladies, for being here. We've enjoyed your visit very much, and hope you come back.
Thank you.
And we'll see you up the Sportsman Show.
Okay.
And we'll see you all next week. Our guest next week is going to be Erin Call. She's the bird biologist. She's going to tell us about eagles and avian flu, I hope. And we'll see you all next week right here on
the Maine Outdoors.